It's time for the Two Old Men, a morning show, and sometimes a dog podcast. And now, here's our hosts, Jeff, John, and Charlie.
Good morning, Dr. Newman.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Me and JW here. I guess you're sheltered in place today.
That's right. Yeah. We're trying to get out ahead of the news.
Well, before we get into the latest on the virus and your thoughts on that for the radio listeners, tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got a family. You got a family, what is it, four of you guys?
That's right, yeah.
How are y'all handling this? What are you doing?
We've been mostly staying in the house. I think we went out for a walk the other day, but there's nobody else out. And I guess that's a good thing. You don't want to meet people right now. They're just about to start their first proper week of online school. So we're going to see how that goes.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Well, it's a learning experience for a lot of industries through here. Do you think that this is a real eye opener to everyone as to how many coronaviruses do we know about?
Oh, seven human coronaviruses, and depends how you count them, but you could say either around 100 or a couple hundred assorted others.
And those would be the ones that are still, like, maybe only living in animals or...
Exactly, yeah. The ones
other hosts.
Cool diseases in animals, those all have names. And then there are some things that have just been detected. Like they'll sample the gut contents of some kind of animal and find 15 of these, and then they'll say, okay, yeah, we'll just give them names or code numbers, because what do you do with all these viruses? Right.
Now, at one time, when you were in here last week, you had said something about usually by the time someone reaches adult age, they've probably had four different coronaviruses in their body already.
Yeah, it's worse than that. By the time they're 5 years old, they've actually had the full suite of coronaviruses. And so all of the first four have these crazy, sounds like code names, but it's just, you know, some scientist's, you know, freezer position or something like that. It's like a little address. So OC43, 229E, HKU1, and NL63. That one at least stands for Netherlands, the NL, but the rest of them, I don't even know what they stand for.
Yeah, me either. And I would just like to point out, I went to the Google Scholar, and you're like, oh, yeah, the first is a little summation, and anybody can understand it.
Oh, yeah, how'd it go?
not well.
Not well. All right.
No, well, on some of them, I get it. No, I appreciate you turning us on to that, and JW and I were talking earlier because we've got that video up on mypigradio.com now.
The new one, yeah.
The new video.
Oh, yeah, good.
And I was hoping that he was, I can't remember her name now, but the little girl that she was 5 years old and she had asked you, and we were talking about this, she had asked you if the coronavirus could turn girls into boys.
Yeah. Oh, man, this poor kid must have been really worried. Yeah.
Right. At 5 years old.
I can imagine something like that going around the schoolyard. Yeah.
At 5 years old, that's not a dumb question.
No. If I was a girl, I wouldn't want to turn into a guy if I was a five-year-old girl.
But we say that that's real important to point out that she didn't just turn around to all of her other little five-year-old girlfriends in the schoolyard and say, hey, this is what happens. She went to an expert and asked. She went to a good resource instead of just going to Facebook.
Hey, happy to help when we can. Yeah, and I don't know. I guess I'm on Facebook now, but I like to think I'm better than some of the stuff that's on Facebook.
I like to think you're better than most of it, Doc.
Hey, Doctor, there was a couple of questions that came to my mind that I didn't put in the questionnaires that we sent to you on the video.
Go ahead.
One of them is, you know, there's always the conspiracy theorists, the people out there, the ones that go, you know, are we absolutely sure that this wasn't man-made, that China didn't do something and it got out or whatever? How do they tell whether it's man-made or something that came from bats or whatever?
Yeah, sure. All right. So if people are going to make something, for one thing, most changes you would make are not going to be good. So this is our Spider-Man thing again. If you're putting in random differences, no matter how smart you think you are, they are probably going to ruin the entire machine. And so you can look at where the random differences are and what sort they are. And they're just scattered everywhere. It would be completely bonkers to take a normal virus and try to just randomly change 6,000 things and then hope that it would work again. With natural selection, so if the virus just makes mistakes, you can get there eventually, but it's real hard, and you have a lot of viruses dying along the way. But to just sit down and say, yeah, I'm going to make a virus that's, I don't know, 10-20% different from something else and hope that it works. People try this sort of thing all the time. They try to make mutations in viruses, not to make them more dangerous or anything like that, but to try and understand how they work. And nearly any mutation that you make in a virus will just kill it. That's what scientists know. Well, so, yeah, it's just a mess. Yeah.
Well, my question is, so with coronaviruses in the past, when we go back to SARS and what have you, it also being a novel coronavirus and the fact that it went from animals to humans.
Yeah.
And then, so do we know how long, say, COVID-19 or the SARS-CoV-2 has been able to be transferred to animals, to people, before this, before November?
Yeah, no, we do not know that, but we do know that there are a bunch of other coronaviruses out there in bats that can all be transferred, at least in the laboratory, to humans. And they haven't done this with the whole virus. They haven't tried to grow the whole virus, but they've taken the protein on the outside of the virus, which is the one that actually gets it into a human cell.
Mm-hmm.
And they check that out, and it turns out there's a great big cluster of these SARS-like viruses that are just known from bats that have the potential to infect humans. And the thing is, this is by no means a comprehensive survey of all the bat coronaviruses in Asia, because, yeah, there's a lot of bats.
I would recommend they quit eating bats. I mean, I'm not...
I was going to say, what does people have a lot of contact with bats? I try to stay away from them.
No, people don't, I think, have any particular contact. And these bats are tiny. They're a kind of micro bat. So think of something about 2 inches long and just a little fluffy thing about the size of a chicken nugget.
So we're talking about a bat maybe the size of like a hummingbird.
Right, exactly. They are so small. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, no, you wouldn't even notice these things around, but they would live in the world, and for a lot of animals, coronaviruses are enteric, which means they cause diarrhea. And so probably what's going on is that these bats are doing their business over some other animal. Some other animal is picking it up because humans don't usually come into contact with that. And then from that second animal, that's how humans are getting infected. We just don't know what the second animal is for sure yet.
Mm. Well, see, and that's what's curious to me is, you know, we know that when it started to go from human to human, and that was November, December. So it was just the unknown of how long had animals been transmitting this to people, or the possibility. Or would it would you have to look at it from the point of view that it quickly mutated to where it could transfer from human to human?
No, I don't think there were any mutations particularly involved.
Or just extremely slippery.
Yeah, it's just that we're actually not that different to any other mammal, anything else with sort of fur and milk. And our proteins are pretty similar. Actually, pretty much if you step back and study all of zoology, you got this giant tree of life with all these crazy things on it. 99% of those crazy branches lead to bacteria or things that are like bacteria. And then there's this one little branch, and there are three little tiny leaves that come out of it, and it's fungi and plants and every kind of animal. So we're basically the same in genetic terms as a banana or as a mushroom. And so, yeah, every animal is really similar to each other. We all run on the same genes, and the virus that grows in one has a decent shot at growing in another if it can get there.
I see.
Let me ask you this. I was thinking about this. A lot of people that have the serious side effects from this get the pneumonia or whatever that causes them so much difficulty. Would it help or does it help people who had the pneumonia shot?
Yeah. So the answer is maybe. Yeah. There was a study that came out of France. I'm not sure if it's fully published or just in a preprint, but actually a relative of mine sent it to me, and he was on point on this one. They tried treating this with the new hot drug is called hydroxychloroquine. It's a modified version of an ancient malaria medicine, like from, you know, British Empire days. and it's the stuff that flavors tonic water. Yeah, that's the quinine, whatever you want to call it. Anyway, they put that in along with an antibiotic, something to kill bacteria, and they saw a really good effect of the two together. So the chloroquine helped a little bit, and having the antibiotic there helped a lot. So antibiotics don't affect the virus directly, but we think that people, when they get sick, will get bacteria in their lungs, and that's part of what makes the disease so bad. And so if you can just knock out the bacteria, let the body focus on taking out the virus, then, yeah, they have a little bit better prognosis. So possibly, if that's the one bacterium that happens to be in your lungs right now and you've cleared it out with that shot, yeah, it could have a little better prognosis.
Well, that's good. That's something positive right there.
Now, I know this, just to break it up here a little bit, this is kind of a silly question, but I've been, you know, with all the news stories and websites and television videos and whatnot, what color is this virus? I've seen these news graphics where they're blue, green, yellow, red.
This is a good question. So if you get enough of it together, it would look like an opal.
Okay.
So
kind of milky white, but with little flashes of color. If you shine a little bit of blue or UV light on it, they're pretty cool. I've concentrated a lot of these viruses, and they're something else to look at.
Now, here is, I don't want to, this isn't conspiracy or anything like that, but am I not mistaken that the WHO and a lot of, I don't know if you were on the team, but a lot of researchers actually back in 2007 kind of predicted that the next coronavirus that would mutate or that would make that jump would be in that general area and come from bats?
Yeah, because that was 2007 when we started finding out about all these other bat SARS-like viruses. So if there's only one of them out there in one bat, you know, then what are the odds that that particular bat happens to transmit it to an animal and then transmit it to a human? Yeah, really low. But when they started looking, they figured out that there are these really widespread bats, and they've all got something related to the SARS coronavirus. And it just seems to be part of normal life for them. They probably don't have any ill effects whatsoever from having this. And they may even pass it on to their children, you know.
See.
So, that was about then. I was not on one of those papers, but I know of at least two of those papers. And, boy, they look really predictive and smart now. But, this was pretty widely accepted in the field.
Yeah, and that
there
was...
There are similar viruses over all of Asia and a large part of, Eastern Africa, as far as we know. They got a bunch out of Kenya.
And so, and for instance, this particular one in Wuhan, the Wuhan province and all that, that was predicted in 2007. So we're talking 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the world is still not, and I mean, let's just, you know, call a shovel a spade. It's not prepared.
This is true, yeah. So what we could have done is started building things like isolation wards, things like drive-through testing centers, because those can fight a lot of different diseases. And the thing is, you don't know which one exactly is coming. So this was around the time that we start learning about these 50 or so different versions of SARS that are out there. And the thing is, they're all different enough from each other that you would have to make a totally different set of drugs to fight them, totally different set of vaccines. And the question is, in a world where we have, you know, terrible heart disease and stuff like that, how much money do you want to throw at a virus that may or may not ever be a thing?
I see that. Well,
I want to ask you a couple of questions that I did ask you on the video, but it's okay if it's a repeat. One is, where do you see us at right now as far as the getting close, or when will we get to the peak of this as far as that's concerned? When do you think it'll start going downhill?
So let me tell you why it's really hard to tell. The CDC, I believe, was asked to not report data on the weekends. And so for 5 days a week, you get these data points, but I think people are still working on the weekends. So they're collecting up data. It's just getting shunted sometimes into Monday, sometimes into Tuesday, sometimes into Wednesday's data pile. And, yeah, you never really know where it's going to pop up, which means that you've got 2 days worth of cases, which is potentially a couple hundred to a couple thousand, and they get randomly sort of spread out over a couple of other days. And so you can't really tell what's going on at the moment. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's a little tough to tell right now.
All right. And the other would be, and a lot of people are wondering this, with the spring supposedly supposed to be very warm across the United States, according to NOAA, above normal, and then we get into the terrible heat of summer down here in the South. Will that have any effect on this virus?
So nobody knows, because we have to go through this, and this is a new virus. That's the short answer. The long answer is there's no reason to suspect it would have any impact whatsoever on the virus, because the virus doesn't do well in the outside world anyway. It only falls apart when it's outside of a body. And it's just a matter of, does it fall apart a little quicker or, you know, a lot quicker? But differences in temperature that we can stand, you know, between sort of summer and winter are really not that big a difference. If you're talking about, if it's going to be 200 degrees outside, then yeah, I think you would start to see some differences. But as it is, no, the weather is always the same inside of a human body, and that's the only place that this virus can grow.
So I guess one of the questions that I had for you was the, what do you think, as far as our response has been, should we, I guess China was like really brutal on their lockdown. And now I see that California has done a state lockdown. Louisiana is doing a shelter in place. Do you see where that may be necessary everywhere? Not that that's going to happen, but you see all of these rumors and people getting panicked online. But wouldn't that help?
It absolutely would. This is the one way that we know for sure we can get rid of this virus. And I don't know, people are trying to take all of these sort of half measures, saying, oh man, I just want to dip my toe in the pool. I'd rather not go through that. But that would definitely work. And it's sort of a question whether anything else would work. And so people are still trying anything else. It's like kid that doesn't want to eat his peas, you know, pushing him around the plate. They're like, oh man, got to try something else. But that's probably where we're going eventually. But it'll all depend on, there's a lot of politics behind this. There's a lot of politicians that have to make decisions for a number of reasons. They're going to try and balance keeping the economy running with making sure that we can get rid of this virus. We know that China's approach works. I think that is the key there. Yeah, it looked pretty brutal in some of those YouTube videos. But, they have nearly knocked out the virus.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would hate that it would have to come to that. I hope more people would start taking it serious here to avoid any kind of measures like that. But that gum.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Yeah. But you look at Louisiana's order, it still gives people a lot of different reasons why they can still get out. Let them go to the grocery store. Let them go to the pharmacy. Let them do this, that, and that.
And liquor stores are essential.
So it's not really a lockdown. Right.
You know, let me. That reminds me. I mean, they're saying that essential store or liquor stores are essential. Texas, Arkansas, all these places that are doing it. Mainly to live there.
I got you.
But I did see. You know, talking about these rumors, these crazy things. If you have alcohol in your bloodstream, you cannot get coronavirus was
no,
one that I saw.
Now, tell me that's not true, Doc.
That is not true.
I'm not a doctor, but I'm gonna say no.
He's a doctor and he says no. That's not gonna do it. By the way, I'm gonna give Jeff my broccoli.
You need to replace 70% of your blood with alcohol, and though people have tried, believe me, nobody's ever got anywhere near close to that.
So that's what I'd have to do. I'd have to get to 70% alcohol.
70% pure ethanol. ethanol. Yeah, yeah.
So, okay.
More concentrated than vodka. Yeah.
So that's a little more like straight corn liquor. Is that what you're saying, Doc? No, I'm
sorry. Even that might be a little bit tame. Yeah, even if they go a step above.
No, the best thing is keep your hands clean.
I think that's a much better option.
Don't touch your face and treat it like you've already got this.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
and smart. I know this is just personal opinion, and you may not even want to comment, but JW and I, just, you know, being the conspiracy theorists that we are.
Wait a minute, he's looping me in. I don't even know what he's talking about. All right.
No, you're in this conspiracy now.
Okay. Yeah, you're in there, man.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but
well,
go ahead.
You're part of the group.
All right.
Now you made me forget what I was going to ask.
Really?
Yeah. Because there's so much that folks need to know about this, and it's just difficult to. Yeah, that was something else. Gargling with salt water kills it in your throat.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
There's just so much. So for just everybody else, what would you recommend for a good resource for them to hit online?
So if you want to see what's going on, you Google situation report coronavirus, and that'll take you to the WHO's situation report page. And they've got every day, so they'll have the stats there. You can see all the numbers, what everything's going on in the world, and they'll have a couple little graphs that kind of keep you up to date with what's going on. But then every single day, they have a little focus item. It's like a little sort of personal interest story, like on how are travel bans going, or, what are hospitals doing differently, or what can somebody do in a kitchen that would make things different and a little bit harder to catch the virus. So they're really cool, and I think pretty accessible. More accessible than that Google Scholar stuff I pointed you to before.
So now, if we started looking, and I was thinking about this yesterday up here at the radio station working, but was thinking about this yesterday, some positives that could come out of this going forward. I would think that it would lead a lot more youngsters towards science, for one thing.
Well, yeah, I think, this is possible. With the original SARS outbreak in 2002, so like before SARS, coronaviruses are this backwater. And then there's a temporary surge for a year or two when everybody's into coronaviruses. And then, you know what? They all wander off and end up doing different things. And the field ends up about the same size it was at the start of the thing. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. And if SARS, this new outbreak is a gateway to get people into other kinds of science, I think that's fine. Mostly people are going to do what they want to do. But, I like it if more people are looking at these things and trying to plan ahead and trying to figure out how we can stop them.
Well, and that's just, you focused, on coronaviruses, but whether it was epidemiology, virology in general, that we see just how something so small, so tiny, so unheard of affects the world. And I think, I don't know, it's really piqued my interest in viruses and learning more, and I thought maybe I'll take Dr. Newman's class.
You come on in.
And then,
you're always welcome.
And then the little girl asked the question about turning into boys, and I thought, well, that's a good question.
It is a good question.
This class may be a bit advanced for me, is what I thought.
Well, we've joined his Facebook group, so we're good now.
That's right. I felt like we joined Stephen Hawking in Friends, Words with Friends.
You want me to do the computer voice? I guess I can't.
but no, Doc, that may be a lot less waste in this country for sure. People with their paper towels hands full of toilet paper, apparently.
Well, and nature is rebounding in so many places where we were just polluting the daylights out of it, which is kind of cool. Yeah. Texas is going to look a little better. The whole world's going to look a little better. Yeah, just us calm down for a month or so.
And I think this is going to help a lot of those people that keep talking about save the planet, save the planet. The planet's going to be just fine without us.
Yeah, planet doesn't need us. Yeah.
<That's> true.
I think they want to say save humanity or save the planet in a usable condition for humanity.
That's right. Let's save humanity.
That's not very catchy, you know?
Doc, so now with what you've seen, I guess, on social media, news, and just out there, and maybe some of the questions that have come to you, what What stands out is some of the better questions are some questions that nobody's asking that you wish they would.
Yeah, so we've had some questions over the Facebook about blood groups and how that affects.
Right, like A positive?
Exactly, yeah, A, B, O, all those things. And there was a little study. It's still a preprint. I don't think it is out fully, and so that means that it may change before, before it's kind of settled science. Mm-hmm. But it shows a link, and this is in sort of the first 2,000 cases in Wuhan, China. But they had a little increase in severity with people who had type A positive blood. As opposed to type O. Type O was a little lower than normal, and A, B, and B were just about exactly the same as you.
J.W., what you got?
Wait a minute, he said A, B, and B were what?
Oh, they're both like they don't have any influence whatsoever on severity. Oh,
okay. Honestly, I don't know. I think
but we don't know for sure, and I looked through that paper, and they didn't do a great job with the statistics.
Oh, well, that's good.
So there's this thing called P hacking, where you run 50 different statistical tests on your kind of weak data, just hoping that one of these things comes back as significant. So significant is our term for importance or, you know, like worth talking about, worth believing. And if you run, 49 of them and the 50th one comes up, then you say, great, my result is significant. But there's a thing called a multiple comparisons test that you should be doing if you're going out there and looking for just any old thing. And it doesn't look like they did that, which means that I'm not sure we can really put a lot of trust in the results as they are now. And I suspect that this is going to get fixed up before it comes out in publication.
Well, I hope they figured out. I'm A positive. That worries me.
As a type O myself, I'm not particularly worried, but
he's not concerned. He's got O.
Yeah, poor Jeff. But yeah, so that, and I had seen that, so I'm glad you brought that up, the about the blood types. And anything else that you've seen that you think just that's not? Oh, what do you know about the on that Google Scholar? I was looking the interferon, the Cuban drug. Have you seen any?
Okay, so interferon is something that was tried for the original SARS virus back in 2002. And they tried it in a whole bunch of patients and did a really careful study. And it turned out that they couldn't find any real effect. There was not enough of an effect to make a difference, like to make a noticeable difference. So these are all the studies that are coming out now are kind of preliminary and real small. These are like 20, 30-person studies usually. And that's about the size of the study that made everybody think that vaccines were linked to autism, which turned out to be completely wrong. They did bigger studies with thousands of people after that, and it just ended up being nonsense. But when you get a real small sample, sometimes things get weird. Like maybe look at your family or my family. You get a real small sample there, and there's definitely some what we call outliers. Yeah.
Right. Okay. JW, what else you got?
I got nothing other than just give us the thought from you for today, this week. How's it going to go? What's your thought?
Okay, so.
Your prediction.
If we ever start getting the complete data reported every day of the week, I think you ought to be able to start to see a difference, and it's going to be starting at the end of this week and then into next week, because it takes about a week after you make some kind of policy change for this to come through in the numbers, just because they're still only testing people once they get sick. Governor of Texas was saying that he's going to have something like 2,000 testing locations open soon. I'm still not sure whether one of those is going to be in Texarkana, but I would very much like for one of those to be in Texarkana.
That brings up another question. I'm sorry, but now that we know it is in the community here.
Right.
So we know it's here. So wouldn't you have to, wouldn't you have to assume that if it's here and one person actually is positive for COVID-19, well, then there are others.
Yeah, most likely. Or if not, there could be others real soon if we don't make sure. Yeah, that one person. Yeah,
is, and it's 14 days, correct? That I mean, give or take.
Give or take, that's about right. Yeah.
So, it leads to the next part of this question is, would it be? I guess would we say that Texas is clear, or your region area is clear, when there's 14 days of negative tests?
So what they want is two entire incubation periods. So if we're assuming 14 days maximum incubation, then we would want to say 28 days with no cases, and that would probably be when they could declare it over.
Wait, but, now wasn't there a movie called 28 Days?
Uh-oh, yeah.
After or something? Sandra Bullock, I think.
But I will throw this out there. I know that I don't know what day it was. It might have been Thursday of last week. I'm not quite sure. But the local stats at the local coronavirus TXK org put out was the fact that there was one positive in Bowie County, but I think there was only like 17 tested.
Right. Yeah.
So that's not very many tested.
No, and the thing is, so I was looking into this over the weekend. The test is available. They've got a giant stockpile. There are certain lot numbers that are approved by the CDC, and you can buy them. They're $125 for 500 tests. And
wait, it's 100.
I believe are already in the county.
$125. Did you say it's $125?
$125 for 500 tests.
Yeah. I'll buy some tests.
Right, yeah. Why don't we all buy some? Because you need this machine to be able to do anything with them. But still, yeah, that's pretty darn cheap. And so when you hear things like the state of Texas is gearing up to be able to, you know, do 2,000 tests in a week, you're like, oh, so you're going to buy four boxes? That's our plan? Yeah.
Well, now that just scares the crap out of me.
Well, that just says that there's a little more that we could be doing.
It says a lot more we could be doing.
Yeah, I think so. Well, the other thing is this drive-through testing. So I'm pretty sure America invented the drive-through. If not, we perfected it. Right. And yet they've got drive-through testing in Korea. Like, do we need every single Taco Bell to be a Taco Bell right now?
Well,
I don't know.
That's a great. That's a really good point.
Yeah,
it's a thing you've already got in every town, and it's a safe way to be able to do the tests. And some of these places, yeah, you may be able to go in there and say, here, we'll cover rent for a while, we'll fumigate the place afterward, and yeah, you're part of the solution now. Yeah, I think it's worth trying.
No, that's a really good idea, and I'm just wondering if anybody in our task force around here has even thought about it, because we've got some open locations.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Good idea.
Well, and anything else you'd like to add, Doc, before we get out of your way? Because I know people all over the world have been calling on you. And
let's see. The only thing would be that I think we're seeing some real progress with the drug tests. And so far there are some positive results coming in, some things that we could be trying. And the neat thing is, it's always with drugs that are they'd already be here. You'd already be able to pick them up at the pharmacy, fairly normal things. And so, this is positive, and they seem to be helping a little bit. So I like our odds. I think this is going to get better. I think we're going to get better at treating this over the next week or two. And then we'll look back on this and say, boy, those were dark times before we knew all this stuff. But, I think things are getting better.
So do you think, in all honesty, do you think that things may be getting back to normal, say, come the end of April, if everybody is pretty, if they're, you know, adamant about cleaning their hands and distancing and social isolation and all that?
Yeah, I think we can have the problem pretty much tackled by then. But there are going to be populations where it's harder to get rid of the virus. Take, for example, undocumented workers or the homeless or something like that. How do you track these people down and, you know, make sure they're getting tested? It takes a lot of, like, all the parts of society cooperating in order to get rid of something like this. And so, yeah, there'll be some parts that are slower, but I think we can tackle most of it in that time. I think that's reasonable, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Doc. Like I say, I mean, people all over the world are after your time, and we appreciate you spending so much with us.
On the radio and on the video.
Hey, happy to help, yeah.
Now, I was talking to Miss Nicola yesterday, and she wants to come on the radio, but she says absolutely zero video when this is over.
You better respect her wishes. Yeah.
Yeah, because
you'll be in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. Just from the text message, I could tell she meant it.
Yeah, that sounds very Nicola.
But you Miss Nicola, and the kids, y'all take extra care and enjoy your time together as you're social distancing over the next.
Same with you. Yeah, and same with all your listeners. I want everybody to get through this, and then
We can
look back on it and say, what a weird time.
No kidding. We've been gathering up board games to play here at the station during the day. And then Anna, you know Anna.
Yeah, of course.
She showed up with a Twister game.
That's maybe the one game you don't want to play right now.
That's right.
Well, actually, not just for the coronavirus. Me and JW is a little too old to bend that way. All right, Doc. Thank you so much. Y'all stay safe and wash your hands.
Of course. All right. You too. Thank you.
This podcast brought to you by Two Old Men and Sometimes a Dog Morning Show Coffee. Coffee with a purpose. Order yours today at mypigradio.com. And be sure to wake up every morning, Monday through Friday, for Two Old Men and Sometimes a Dog to stay up to date on what's going on in our community.